Okay, meeting will come to order, Governmental Operations and Veterans Affairs Committee, today on March 2nd. We do have a quorum and approval of minutes. Representative Kahn.
I move approval of minutes.
I'm going to pull your mic down. Representative Kahn moves approval of the minutes of the meeting from March 1st. Any discussion? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. Members, today we have two bills up. We're actually going to do Representative Cornish's bill first and then spend the remainder of the meeting on Representative Osmond's bill. And I just want to make note that anything that you left in your folders yesterday or should be in your folders as you left them, since we'll be continuing the discussion on Representative Osmond's bill. So with that, Representative Cornish's bill is up. I'd like to move that House File 307 be recommended to pass and be and go to the floor on the General Register. Representative Cornish, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, thank you. House File 307, I'll give you a layman's explanation here and then we can get into more detail if you'd like. Farm Survey is what this bill is about, and Farm Survey would include white-tailed deer, mule deer, caribou, elk, moose, reindeer. Right now there are 756 Farm Survey in Minnesota, and probably each one of you have got one or several within your district, whether you know it or not. And what this bill does is there's a surveillance program going on because of CWD and other serious diseases within the possibility in the elk herds, Farm Survey, and worried about that transference to the wildlife population. So for some time now they've had this registration program where you register your animals with the Animal Board of Health, and there's an inspection and registration process to limit the spread of these dangerous diseases. The problem is that out of the 756 Farm Survey, there are 615 herds that are registered, but only 530, I believe, are in compliance. To get these to come into compliance, what we'd like to do in this bill, by the way, this has been through ag policy and environment already, went to the floor, and we called it back because we realized there was rulemaking in here. The bill had no opposition, and in fact the Association of Elk Breeders that this affects have given it their okay and are aware of everything in it. Anyway, back to the bill. What this does is it moves current statutory regulation from Chapter 17 to Chapter 35, and why we want to do that is the Department of, or the Animal Board of Health has already enforced these regulations and has the stricter penalties and rules to deal with the livestock, but they haven't got them to deal with Farm Survey. So by moving from Chapter 17 to 35, it puts them under the statute from Chapter 35 that carries the heavier criminal penalties and civil penalties. And so we're able to use these to be able to coax the people that are out of compliance into compliance. And that's what House File 307 is about. In the rulemaking provision, there's certain rules and statutes that have to be transferred and instructs the revisor to correct and cross-reference in statute and rule to comply with the changes made in this bill from the transference to Chapter 17 to Chapter 35. So it doesn't really increase penalties or make new penalties. It moves this Section 17 into Section 35, which allows them to use those which they already are for livestock and brucellosis and other diseases to be able to apply those penalties to Farm Survey. That's a brief description of the bill, and I'd answer any questions if you had them.
Representative Cornish, I have a question. You made reference to the revisor's instructions on page 5, starting at line 20. But what about just ahead of that there, subdivision 13, starting page 5, line 17, about the Board of Animal Health shall adopt rules as necessary. Could you give us a little more information on that, please?
Yeah, Madam Chair, with your permission, I'd like to call on Dr. Anderson, whoever else he might have with him, to explain that subdivision.
Thank you. Dr. Anderson, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman and committee members. My name is Paul Anderson. I'm a veterinarian with the Board of Animal Health. And to answer your question, the Board of Animal Health currently has rulemaking authority, broad rulemaking authority, in statute in Chapter 35. What we'd like to do with this addition in the Farm Survey is just clarify that indeed we will need to make rules to fine-tune the statutes. And I'll give you an example. With the chronic wasting disease program, the stipulations by statute are very broad, and issues like quarantine, lengths of quarantine, how we deal with the finer points of that disease are evolving, and there will need to be rules made over the coming years. We're following the Code of Federal Regulations and developments across the United States, and we just wanted to make sure that it was clear that, that we will be making rules. There currently are no rules for farm survey that are attached to any statutes, so this would be rulemaking that would be new.
Thank you. Any questions for members? Is there anybody from the audience who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Cornish, would you like the final word before we vote on your bill?
No, Madam Chair, just to look for a green vote.
Sounds good. Chair, we renew the motion that House File 307 be recommended to pass and go to the General Register. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the bill goes to the Register. Thank you, Representative Cornish.
Thank you.
Okay, members, next up is House File 826, Representative Osmond's bill. We spent quite a bit of time on this yesterday. We do have at least one other testifier from the audience, and if anybody else from the audience is interested in testifying for or against this bill, please send your name up here so we can get you on the list. Kind of the game plan here is we'll have some opening comments from Representative Osmond, maybe any quick questions from committee members, and then we do have several amendments. So I'd like to get to the amendments as soon as we can and spend the remainder of the time in committee now until noon dealing with this bill and moving it on to the local government committee. So with that, we'll continue the discussion of House File 826, Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Just a quick reminder, this is in MPCA is involved right now in identifying impaired waters. They're involved now in trying to put together TMDL plans to have them put together at the local levels for dealing with this issue. What this bill really is trying to do is to coordinate those overall efforts through multiple state agencies, as well as get somebody in charge with trying to sort out priorities through the Clean Water Council. This is an activity that's trying to be an inclusive process that tries to get everyone involved and avoid legal actions, both through its progressive action so the federal government will not be prone to through lawsuits get involved in how we're dealing with Minnesota waters, through the public input of the process, because we know that that's the best way to develop good quality policies in the state of Minnesota, and through the grassroots plan and implementation. That's kind of what the bill, overview or reminder of what the bill is about, and I'm sure if we go to a testimony, I think it'd be great.
Thank you. Let's take some quick questions from members. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Osmond, I've got a concern. One of the concerns is that I think the from the testimony yesterday that there are some communities that are going to be negatively impacted in regard to this piece of legislation, and one happens to be on a river and the reality is that they'll not be exempt, and they will have to increase their taxes to pay for the demand that's going to be made. And it's my understanding that this applies to Lake Pepin on the Mississippi River, and that's a concern, to be quite frank. The other one is, the other concern that I've got, and that is that this, from my perspective, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is another mandate without funding. And the state has a tendency to mandate and to mandate and to mandate and to mandate. And then the people in the local communities are the ones that have to pick up the cost of the state mandating. And I've generally said that if you have a mandate, it should be funded. And if your city or area that I represent or whatever else the case may be is going to have to raise property taxes because of a state mandate and there's no funding, I don't think that's the right thing to do. Now, can you legalize it? Heck yeah, you can legalize anything. Doesn't make it right. And so I'm a little bit concerned about that, and I do know, Madam Chair, that the bill is going to be sent over to Representative Olson's committee, and so maybe we can do some things in regard to the issue at that point, but I don't know right now, to be quite frank with you, how I might vote on this particular issue. I want to vote with to move the bill on, and I have a respect for Representative Osmond's bill that he's got, and I think it's a good one. But there are just some concerns that I have, and I need to be addressed. So I just wanted that for the record, so that I'm aware as to what might transpire. But by the same token, I think it needs to move on to a next piece of legislation and have a hearing in the next committee.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dempsey. I feel very much the same way with regard to mandates. The difficulty is here, this is a federal mandate that the state has to react to. Without appropriate reaction, we can be impacted significantly with regard to our economic development in the state of Minnesota. I think one thing that the communities would feel very devastated with, I know that Red Wing would be very impacted if they were not able to grow. If they were not allowed to have additional housing projects, if they were not allowed to have an expansion of their current businesses or additional businesses brought into their community because of lawsuits regarding their the impact of that activity on impaired waters. And it's very obvious to their location with regard to impaired waters, but it should be noted that the first lawsuits that have been filed are very far upstream, and we're having communities that are in the northern part of Annandale, Maple Lake, for example, that have their activities now being curtailed because of the identification of impaired waters in your area of the state, Representative Dempsey. So this one, we're kind of all in this together, and the federal mandate has been placed upon us, although this is one that helps us, I think, really get to a point of cleaning up our waters, which should be a Minnesota value in the very first place. And so I'm pleased to work with this issue and to work out any concerns that you may have and the fairness of how we deal this along the way.
Madam Chair.
All up, Representative Dempsey.
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate that, Representative. And as I said, I do have some concerns, and I appreciate the fact that you're willing to kind of spend some time where you and I can maybe sit down and see what we can do to make it a bit fairer and not pick one particular area that's going to get nailed pretty heavily and not to their own because of their own fault. So thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciated the opportunity of speaking my piece in regard to the issue.
Anytime, Representative Gibson. Other questions from members? Okay, let's see. Why don't we take Leslie Davis from the audience? Is he here? I know you were patient enough to wait yesterday and come back today. Appreciate that. If you'd like to come up to the table and then identify yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Leslie Davis, and I represent probably all the people in Minnesota that don't like what's going on here about this bill. I know everybody's kind of climbing on board. Well, I want to start by telling you I'm a little upset this morning by being stopped by the state patrol outside the door, and they told me that there were some allegations of threatening phone calls that I had made last night to some members of this committee and threatening to upset or disrupt this committee. Well, those of you who know me or have seen my activities saw me in the audience yesterday. If I wanted to disrupt, I would have. So I want to file that complaint with this committee, and if there are members here that receive threatening phone calls from me, I think they should contact their attorneys and make a formal charge against me. I intend to make a charge against the state patrol for coercing and disrupting and upsetting me on the way into your committee. So that's the start of my morning this morning, and not very pleasant.
Mr. Davis, you do need to identify yourself for the record. I see on the agenda you're listed with Earth Protectors. Can you just get that on the record?
Earth Protectors is an environmental group I started in 1983. I'm a little upset.
Take your time. Mr. Davis, if you'd like to maybe come back later in the meeting. Okay, let's do that. Anybody else from the audience like to testify for or against this bill? Okay, Representative Osment, I think we're ready to move to amendments. Do you have any comments before we start that process? Okay, members, we have a variety of amendments, and I'm not really aware of who's offering what amendments. We'd like to start with the ones that relate to specific areas in this bill on pages 7 through 10. So, okay, can we start with yours then? Let's get that distributed. Pull your mic down.
Madam Chair, I do have one I'm offering on behalf of Representative Aaron Peterson, who's at a National Guard funeral. That's where I had to go yesterday when I left early. On his behalf, I'm offering the 0125 amendment.
Representative Seifert moves the 0125 amendment. Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, the 0125 amendment is what I think a common sense provision in the bill that a lot of our cities, Representative Dempsey brought up the fact of the mandates have brought forward. Some people had wanted to require a Chapter 14 sonar originally for TMDLs, and I talked with Representative Osment about that and thought that it did add a lot of burden to the agency. In trying to get something done, you can't be caught up in rulemaking and some of these things that are really going to cause a lot of problems. But what I did think was reasonable would be just four items to be included in a TMDL that would give facts out on the table for the communities who have to implement this bill, for them to have some assurances that the legislature is sensitive to what we are mandating. And these four things are as follows. A TMDL has to include, number one, a statement of all facts and scientific data supporting the TMDL. I think that's just common sense. Number two, the probable cost of compliance, so we know exactly what we're getting into in terms of a cost mandate. Thirdly, a description of any less costly alternatives that could be achieved and an explanation as to why those alternatives were rejected, so we get everything on the table that is available. So if we can do something that's less costly than what PCA may want to do, we've got that on the table, and then they'd have to give an explanation if they went to the city of Marshall or the city of Rochester or Red Wing or whatever and said, hey, we want you to do it this way. They have to give a reason why you couldn't do it the less costly way. I think that's in fairness to the cities, we should try to do that for them. And then lastly, an implementation plan for the TMDL that includes individual wasteload allocations for any point sources regulated by the TMDL. And I think they are planning on doing that already, but PCA may want to testify on this. I thought this would be a good compromise as opposed to what originally was brought forward by the cities. It does not require Chapter 14 compliance per se. I think it shows sensitivity to the communities that will have to do this. It does not muck up. I don't believe it doesn't muck up the bill or the process, but rather gives us a real clear line of what we're getting into in terms of costs and alternatives. I did have a chance to talk to Representative Osment briefly before the committee and PCA. Once again, this wasn't my original amendment. It was Representative Peterson's, but due to him being at the funeral, out of courtesy and our friendship, I want to offer this amendment to the committee.
Thank you. Representative Osment, would you like to comment? And then it looks like we're being joined by Assistant Commissioner Thorvig. So Representative Osment?
I turn right to the experts on this one.
Assistant Commissioner Thorvig, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, excuse me. My name is Lisa Thorvig, Assistant Commissioner at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I have taken a quick look at the amendment. B1, a statement of all the facts and scientific data supporting the TMDL, that's already part of the TMDL. That's not a problem. Our TMDLs are based on science, and so that makes sense. Items 2, 3, and 4 are a little bit, item 4 is problematic, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Under the Federal Clean Water Act for Impaired Waters, the requirements for the state are to identify and list impaired waters and then prepare a total maximum daily load that identifies the sources of the impairment and a reduction plan to clean up those sources. But it doesn't require states to actually submit implementation plans. States have been very reluctant to give away their flexibility on how we implement TMDLs by providing that information to the federal government. In fact, a few years back, the federal government actually tried to develop new TMDL rules that would require states to submit implementation plans, and the states were very successful under the Clinton administration to keep the federal government from doing that. So number 4 really talks about putting an implementation plan in a TMDL. And we would not support that for ourselves and on behalf of all the states, that this would be precedent-setting. We don't want to give our flexibility up because the federal government can't mandate implementation except for MPDES permit holders. So these TMDLs address agricultural implementation that needs to occur to clean up waterways, failing septic systems, which aren't regulated by the federal government. So we've been reluctant to have EPA kind of mandate cleanup plans that implicate folks that aren't currently regulated. So number 4 would be no. In a TMDL, we have to provide reasonable assurance to EPA that we can implement the reductions that are in there. So we do talk about the kinds of implementation that we'll be doing and options for implementing and time frames, whether we think it'll take 10 years or 20 years to get this done. So I think in terms of having general statements on options and probable costs, I think costs for wastewater treatment plants are easier to estimate than costs for farmers or costs for other things that currently aren't regulated. So that's why I'm a little bit concerned with the language. It seems to tread that line about what the state has control of in its implementation plan that we work out with our communities and what we give to the federal government and let them have purview over.
Representative Seifert?
Madam Chair, I know there's someone that wants to testify on this and potentially that might answer some of the questions I may have. So maybe we should take the other testifier and then I'll chime in.
Ms. Thurlow, welcome to the committee and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Carrie Thurlow. I'm with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. The Coalition does support the amendment in the present form. While we understand the MPCA's concern about having the federal government review implementation plans, that is not our intent. And we would certainly be willing to accept any language that would put in language that would say that it would be included in the TMDL report, but the implementation plan would not be sent to the federal EPA for review. Our understanding is, in talking with other experts nationally dealing with TMDLs, is that other states do provide this information up front. What we're talking about with this amendment is providing all the information up front so that during the public notice and comment period, everybody knows what we're talking about before the EPA finalizes this language. I do want to share with you, again, Mr. Flaherty yesterday talked about the Lower Minnesota River TMDL, it's a lengthy document, but in the document it does include what number 4 is really seeking to get at, and that's the individual allocation loads for the TMDL. It's this chart right here. What we're asking for is something that's not unheard of, but it gives cities the opportunity to see exactly what we're talking about and what sorts of allocations they will be expected to comply with when the EPA does finalize the TMDL and when it is implemented. So while we do understand the MPCA's concern, we think that in the interest of providing all of the public information on this important issue, that it would be an important amendment, and we'd certainly be willing to work to provide language specifying that this implementation plan does not have to go to the EPA for approval.
Question, Representative Kahn.
Yes, Madam Chairman and Representative Osmond. I don't know if it's possible. Two possible things. One could drop four. Maybe PCA wants to comment, if that's their only problem with it. Or one could write additional language that says this does not imply that the implementation plan has to be passed by the federal government. We could do some separation between... I understood they didn't have any problems with 1 through 3. They thought that that would come out in their process anyway, and so we need to put some distinction between 3 and 4. I don't know. Maybe
Representative Osmond.
PCA could comment on that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kahn, I think the one that was not objectionable is number 1, because that's automatically going to be happening in the TMDL. The probable cost of compliance of the TMDL, you'd have to have attained the information that they wanted to have in number 4 and 3. And then have an extensive evaluation as to what the potential cost would be. And this is a TMDL, as I understand it, and I should have the commissioner maybe explain the TMDL process more thoroughly to members so that you understand how this is being divided out. Because 3 and 4 specifically talk to implementation of the cleanup or of the changes that need to take place. And number 2 is saying, okay, and what will be the cost of 3 and 4? And that's not what I understand is in the TMDL process. If I could have Commissioner Thorvig come up and let us know what is actually in a total maximum daily load plan. This is giving my explanation, but I'd rather have it come from
Chair. Sure. Yeah, Assistant Commissioner Thorvig.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, right now I'm a little confused because what Ms. Thurlow said about the Minnesota River TMDL, that is the information that we will include in TMDLs. What she found acceptable and she wants to be assured will be included in other TMDLs. I don't read the 2 through 4 as stating that in a way that's acceptable to us. An implementation plan is defined as something else in the TMDL process than what we did in the Minnesota River TMDL. So I think the problem here is language problems and what we're describing. But a TMDL does look at the sources of the pollution. It works with those sources to figure out what kind of reductions could be taken by sources to actually clean up the river. We talk about how long something could be implemented. So, for example, in the Minnesota River TMDL, point sources, the wastewater treatment plants, have a 10-year window to reduce their phosphorus loads, whereas the cities that have stormwater discharges will have 20 years to address their stormwater discharges in the Minnesota River TMDL. So the TMDL does talk about what needs to be done in order to clean up the river in broader terms. So I'm having a little bit of trouble reconciling what Ms. Thurlow said and what this amendment says to me. And if we could maybe work on some language, maybe we could bring something back.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Seifert. If it'd be possible for you to withdraw the amendment and let us give actual work on this, this bill has to go to other committees, and we can work on trying to craft a language to cover these areas, as the Assistant Commissioner has stated.
Madam Chair, I don't think I sit on any of the other committees. Is the only issue. I don't know if is there anything that can be worked on to represent Khan's kind of fiddling around? Is there something? I mean, I could withdraw it temporarily and see if there's something they can work out privately or something, but I'm not sure I want to lay it over permanently. Just for the simple fact is I guess I don't see the problems that the PCA sees with just saying this is what the cost of compliance will be for the communities that I'm constantly hearing from, saying you guys, Representative Dempsey probably laid it out the best, that we constantly mandate, and then when the property taxes go up, they say the legislature keeps doing all these things, and you know, if we're not even going to have an estimate of what the cost is on this, I think it makes a lot of sense. But I mean, I can withdraw temporarily, but I'd like to kind of have a discussion on this and try to get something in the bill.
Okay.
Maybe not all of it, but at least some pieces. Representative Osmond, I did talk to a day or two ago and agreed with him that I think if we end up going into Chapter 14, it would end up mucking up a lot in the bill. So I did try to water it down quite a bit in doing this, and talk with Representative Peterson as well to try to work with the author on this and work out something reasonable. So
Representative Seifert temporarily withdraws the 0125 amendment. Representative Kahn.
I'd actually make some comment before it's withdrawn, so it's still before us. And that's one of the things that we were looking at, and maybe this would work, is 2 and 3 seem to be the problem, and the way 4 is written. So what about a TM, saying a TMDL must include and keep 1, and then add to 1, so from 4, so take out 2 and 3, because we don't think we can do that until after the TMDL is accepted, from what I've heard. But take the language from 4, slightly changing it, including individual waste load data for any point sources regulated by the TMDL.
Representative, this is getting a little too complicated here. I did officially say that the amendment was withdrawn. Why don't you work on it in the next few minutes here between the two of you, and we'll get it back, and if we can get it in writing, it's a little bit preferred.
Okay.
I have a whole list of members here with questions, so we'll come back to you here in a bit. First up was Representative Mahoney.
My question was to the amendments, so I guess we'll have to wait. But
okay.
If I could just say that,
pull your mic a bit.
When they're working on this privately, just remember, in number 2, we as legislators always ask for costs whenever we, you know, anything comes in front of us. And for an amendment like this to not have costs, then it might be a problematic when it comes back.
Thank you, Representative Haas was the next up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand that the amendment is withdrawn, but I just want to make a couple comments and they kind of echo Representative Mahoney's comments. But as elected officials and also the public, there's always, I think, a standard set of questions that's consistently asked. Is what's the cost? Where does the money go? How is it used? And why don't we do it like this? This amendment addresses every single one of those questions. And if we're not asking those questions, I think most people around us would say we're not doing our job. And when we have something as far-reaching as mandates such as this, and we ask for public comment and transparency, I think these questions have to be answered in that process.
Thank you. Next up, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My comments also relate to the amendment, and I guess there's more of a question, and maybe that'll be addressed when it comes up. My concern is with the, you know, basically my understanding is that we come up with a total maximum daily load that and where that load is coming from, and try to come up with, you know, what we want it to be. And my understanding is that 2, 3, and 4 kind of prescribe here's how you will fix it, or here's how we think maybe you should fix it, and here's what that will cost. And I'm a little concerned about prescribing that when we have other alternatives, other ways of doing things. I think we all do want to know costs, but there might, you know, I'm thinking about out in the rural areas, there might be more than one way to stop some of the point source allocation of the waste, and to have the right of the TMDL prescribe how that should be done might be prohibiting or taking away the flexibility of trying to comply with what the end result is. That's the concern I had, and that's the question I had. And I guess I just asked it, even though the amendment's not withdrawn, but that's a concern I have. So as they're working on this, that would be what I'll be looking at. You know, are we prescribing how to fix the problem rather than just identifying the problem and letting you know, the individuals who are affected by it work on that solution? Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Osmond.
Well, I'm fine with where we're at. They understand that they're working on an amendment.
Okay, good. Let's move on to another amendment. We'll be coming back to the one that was temporarily withdrawn. I asked members, let us know which amendment you have. We'd like to take the ones related to pages 7 through 10 first. Is anybody ready here? I don't know what belongs to what what amendment belongs to which member. So speak up. Representative Hoche, which amendment do you have?
Madam Chair, I have a 127 amendment.
Okay, we'll get that distributed. Okay. Representative, was the 127 amendment.
Yep.
It's coming around, so if you can just kind of describe it so we see it.
Madam Chair, I believe this amendment falls in the jurisdiction of the areas that we want to address at this time. Mainly on page 7, it deletes lines 19 through 34. It also deletes lines on page 2, 29 to 33. And really what the crux of this is that it removes the third-party TMDL developments. As a former local elected official, I think one of the biggest concerns is inconsistencies when implementing mandates. I think when allowing third parties to come into the process, that there's automatically some suspicion and some concern that things are going to be more motivated by agendas more so than by fact. And I think by leaving the development of a TMDL by the public agencies are going to be the most consistent. And this amendment does not prevent the contracting of services with other consultants at the same time. It's just who is responsible, who is the responsible party is still the public agency that has to be reported to. So that's pretty much the crux of the amendment.
Thank you. And I think Representative Osment's maybe just seen it now. Representative Osment or Assistant Commissioner Thorvig, I'd like to comment on the 0127 amendment. Representative Osment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. This particular amendment really goes against exactly the heart of the bill. This bill is to try and be inclusive and get local participation, decision-making made at the local level, to be heavily involved in the process, using existing government without this ability to use third parties, which means soil and water conservation districts or watershed districts and our counties, as well as private entities, that the taking that out would mean there'd be a significant cost increase in developing a state bureaucracy to handle this. We then end up with the state having the responsibility for the impairment, responsibility for actually pulling together the TMDL, and then actual implementation of that TMDL. And if I know there's one thing to make certain to tick off the people at the grassroots is to have the state of Minnesota start to come in and tell them what to do. And now we have a bill here that's put together that says we don't want to tell the people at the local level what to do. We want to help coordinate it. There's responsibility there. It says clearly in the bill that the MPCA has to approve anything that's done by a third party before it can go on. The MPCA is responsible for identifying third parties and agreeing to them, and so we have the state already accountable for this, but the overall work product is to become a local endeavor with addressing the problems in that particular watershed and that are originating in that watershed. And so I would strongly oppose this amendment, 0127.
Okay,
I would like to have some testimony from Mr. Bowen.
Let's take questions first. I've got three members up. Representative Hoche.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Osment, I think your bill is a very good bill, and one of the reasons for that is I think there's enough safeguards within it that address some of your concerns. On page 10, line 4, it talks about the when public agencies that are involved in the implementation of a TMDL, it has no mention of a private agency within that area, but only public agencies that are doing the TMDLs have to include participation by local units of government, stakeholders within the process. So those safeguards are clearly defined in this bill. And I think it addresses the concerns that were just spoke of. Now, the biggest concern we have, and the best analogy that I can draw, is when we talk about the global warming debate. We have scientific evidence supporting both sides of the debate, and we don't know where things are going. And a lot of times things are driven more by personal agendas or political agendas, more so by fact. Are we going to be getting ourselves involved in that process here? We have the Chamber of Commerce on supporting this. Are they going to get involved and start trying to push for one thing? Is the Sierra Club going to get involved and push for another way for implementation of a TMBL? It opens up for inconsistencies in this process, and I think by still being able to contract with consultants and involve all stakeholders, that we can still have that accountability, but just some more consistency by having to report to one single entity.
Representative Osment?
The representative is wrong, Madam Chair, and I'd like to have testifiers to identify that.
Mr. Bone, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Ray Bone. I'm here representing the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts. And I think, you know, by removing this provision, section of law, it really does, as I said yesterday, really takes the heart out of this legislation. Before this whole process started, I had heard rumors about people that were going to be involved and not involved, and then I also heard that, well, the SWCDs and the watershed districts would have to be intricately involved in the implementation of this program. So I then contacted the commissioner's office, and I said, geez, you know, if we're going to be involved in this, we should be sitting on the committee that's deciding what needs to be done. And they did eventually let us on the committee, and we were very pleased about that, and we were involved in this whole process. And, you know, I mean, our watershed districts work at the local level. And, you know, we do not want MPCA in there telling us what's best for our watershed area. We think we know those watershed areas better than PCA, and we have the expertise in most cases to deal with it. And I, you know, if we have the expertise to deal with it, if we know who the stakeholders are, because we work with them every day, they're our neighbors, you know, they're people that live in our communities, why would we want to turn that over to St. Paul or to Washington? I don't think that's the way to do it. I think the way to do it is leave it at the local level and let the locals decide these issues and work together as neighbors on how to figure them out. That's what this bill is about. I think that's the strength of this legislation. And if you remove this, you're eliminating, to me, one of the most critical aspects of this legislation.
Okay, we have a couple other members on the list. Next up, Representative Beard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Osment. These third-party people developing these, the third parties developing the TMDLs, could you give us specific examples of who that would be? Would it indeed be a local chapter of the Sierra Club, or would it be an environmental engineering firm? Or could the Chamber of Commerce have a committee to develop one, or the Board of Soil and Water, so on and so forth? Could you give us some specific examples?
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask Ms. Erickson to respond, because their organizations have been involved with this effort.
Ms. Erickson, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Judy Erickson, and I'm with the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And in your packets, I believe from yesterday, there was a list of organizations that are currently doing TMDLs, and they are watershed districts, watershed management organizations, soil and water conservation districts, a couple of counties. And I think it's anticipated that these are the same types of groups who would be doing the third-party TMDLs. And as Mr. Bowen indicated, these are folks who are working at the local level. As I said yesterday, we don't work in isolation. We all work together. In some instances, the watershed district is the appropriate lead. Some soil and water district is the appropriate lead, or the county. And those are the folks that have been primarily doing some of the third-party TMDLs to date. And I just, again, would want to remind the committee that the language that is being proposed to be deleted doesn't say the pollution control agency shall enter into third-party TMDLs. It's permissive. So in some instances, it is appropriate, like on the Lower Minnesota TMDL that was presented yesterday, that the PCA do that. That was a big undertaking, a big watershed. But I know in Anoka County, the Anoka Soil and Water District is doing some TMDLs on a couple of lakes. Those are small TMDLs. So there will be, it's not a one-size-fits-all, and by allowing for third-party TMDLs allows flexibility at the state level and at the local level to get the job done in the best manner. So we would encourage the committee to keep the third-party TMDL in the bill. Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, so specifically, though, these that I have appear on the list, obviously are people with some skill or expertise, but could I get down to my local chamber and throw together a group of interested folks and go out and do one? that would open itself to wanderings about our motivation? And who would we report to? Who would we have to go to apply to become one of these?
Assistant Commissioner Tarvik.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the Pollution Control Agency has ultimate oversight and authority for all the TMDLs that are done. Even where we enter into an agreement to have a TMDL led by one of the parties that you see on this list. So the PCA still has to take that when that TMDL is completed. We need to take it, public notice it, have an opportunity for public comment, have the ability for people to request contested case hearings and take it to court. So it's going to be in our best interest to ensure that agreements that we enter into are with parties that have credibility within the community. I suspect that we'll probably check, if we're uncertain about someone, we'll probably check with other local units of government and make sure that they feel comfortable with this third party leading the TMDL. But there isn't enough resources or ability to put enough expertise within the MPCA to do all of the TMDLs that will be required in Minnesota, simply because we have so much water and so many TMDLs that we will have to do. Ms. Erickson said it perfectly. Right now, we, on your list, you see Yellow Medicine River Watershed District has led a TMDL. That's actually completed. It was approved by the PCA through our public process. EPA has approved it, and it'll start to be implemented. That's just on a small stretch of the Yellow Medicine River. And it made sense for the watershed districts to understand and undertake that TMDL. So the big ones, like Lake Pepin, like the Minnesota River, the PCA will take on those big ones that have a lot of conflict and are very complicated. But we need the help of the local governments to take on these less complicated ones where it's better done at the local level. And PCA does retain ultimate authority over the whole thing.
Next up is Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Assistant Commissioner, therein lies the rub. And Representative Osmond, you know, you're asking every urban legislator to transfer tremendous amounts of money from their districts out to the rural areas where most of these are going to be done. And I don't have any idea what your criteria is for a qualified public or private entity. I mean, it could be Sierra Bob on one side of the street or Farmer Bob on the other side of the street. I mean, I don't know what your criteria is. I mean, do they have to have a high school graduation certificate, or do they have to be a hydrologist? And you're telling us to take it on faith that you will only pick qualified organizations to do it. You know, explain to me what your criteria is that a watershed district or a soil and water board that is going to spend $80 million, you know, how are we going to do this? What constitutes a qualified group? Don't tell me that it's the watersheds or the soil and water board. Tell me what they have to know in order to do one.
Sister Commissioner Thorvin.
Madam Chair and Representative, the local organization that leads doesn't need to have all the qualified people on a staff. They have the ability to also contract with private consulting firms to do the modeling and the more technical work, and we expect that. TMDLs themselves cost in the range of $100,000 to a couple of million dollars. So this isn't the big cost implementation. This is actually the evaluation of the sources of the pollutants, the kind of reductions that are needed to achieve water quality standards, and working with the parties to get agreement on kind of how we're going to do that, how we're going to make that happen. So our qualifications are really going to be looking at, is this an entity that has done water quality work in the area? In some cases, in some areas of the state, like in the Red River Basin Commission is a very well-respected entity up there that does a lot of water quality work, works with watershed districts and soil water conservation districts, and I don't think people object to them being the lead. Similarly, in the Twin Cities area, Actually, we have a number of impaired waters in the Twin Cities area. And in fact, in the upper Mississippi River, there are a number of impaired waters that discharge the Mississippi River that send water down to our drinking water intakes in St. Paul and Minneapolis. So this law will have a significant impact and benefit to the seven county metropolitan area. So I wanted to make that clear too. But it isn't that that this entity needs all of the expertise on board. They can enter into contracts as well. And we have to decide if people are capable of leading or whether we need to lead and they just partner with us.
Follow-up, Representative Mettmer. I mean, how about Mahoney, sorry. You're next up on the list. Mahoney.
You know, and as to your comment about the impaired waters above the drinking intake areas, most of the metro area has put in water filtration systems and water treatment facilities that take all this out. We've already done all this. I mean, St. Paul separated their sewers years ago. Pig's Eye now, I know it has the ability to handle all the faucets coming through these sewers now. And I can go down that list. So be careful what you say here because, you know, I don't think it's entirely on the mark. So.
Okay, let's go to Mecmer, Representative Mecmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm not sure that I wanted to follow up on Representative Mahoney's question. And I don't know if you want to have one of the water conservation districts or one of the watershed people come forward to answer the question. But specifically, I think he was wondering if they have some of the qualifications necessary to do this test. And do the watersheds and the conservation districts hire people qualified to do the work that they're doing? I guess that's my question. My experience with those people are they're extremely qualified and I don't know, do they have less of a college requirement in their work than the MPCA?
Mr. Bowen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Representative McNair. I think it depends on the watershed district. You know, some have staff, especially like in the in the metropolitan area, they're much more staff intensive. They have 5, 6, 7 staff. They would have technicians, or, you know, and those technicians obviously would have to meet the criteria. Any, when it comes to monitoring or any other the scientific activities that take place, they're certainly on par with anybody, I think, at PCA, clearly. No question about that. The you know, and if they don't have the expertise, and many, like the, especially the large districts that are not in the metro area, that are not staff-intensive, they typically will hire that through the use of consulting consultants. And that's typically, they find that more cost-effective than having full-time staff. So on a project-by-project basis, they would hire, you know, consulting engineers or consultants, whatever they need.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. And Mr. Bowen, just to follow up, you struck my interest. You said they might be able to bring somebody in. So potentially they could bring in an environmental teacher from the local high school, like in Hastings, who I just happen to know you have to have a bachelor's degree to teach in high school. And he could bring some students in, and they could monitor the Vermilion River from Farmington down to Hastings. And would it be fair to surmise that they might be able to do that more efficiently, less costly, than if we were to have some bureaucrats from St. Paul truck on down to Farmington and to Hastings and go in the water and they got to have drive down, and do we probably pay a mileage to drive down from St. Paul? You get where I'm coming. I just my experience with this has been fantastic. These are kids in school that are doing great work, real data. They're supervised by a very competent person who's then overseen by somebody else yet.
Madam Chair, Representative, for the record, my name is Dick Nelson. I'm a coordinator for the Red River Watershed Management Board. Representative, you struck on a very good thing there in that, because we have been trying to get out, our organization has been getting out in front of this for the last several years. We have been working exclusively with the MPCA, Department of Health, as well as the schools in a River Watch program that goes out. We monitor all the sites before and after we install our projects. We get a better handle on it at the local level of where our problems are, so that way we can try to make our projects more work better. And that, but it is more cost effective, way more cost effective to have it. And they're overseen by two former MPCA employees and we're also in partnership with the Department of Health to do the testing of these things, the water samples, and that we also work with the DNR.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative McNamara, I'd just like to point out page 10, line 21. This amendment, in the spirit of the amendment, does not prohibit that from happening at all. And I'll quote this. The Clean Water Council and public agencies shall make use of available expertise from educational, research, and technical organizations. That can still happen. There's no language in this amendment to delete that. And I also want to point out the fact that from all my understandings is the MPCA can still contract out services that include all of our soil and water conservation districts, watershed districts, so on and so forth. And Mr. Shepherd, I don't mean to put you on the point, but I believe that that's still the case, is that the contractual obligations can still be made with consultants under this legislation.
Mr. Shepherd, you can pull your mic down. Thank you.
Madam Chair and members, there is a statute that is currently on the books that authorizes all state agencies, including the PCA, to enter into contracts for professional or technical services. That's an existing law.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. Although the MPCA may be able to do it underneath current law, as they have in the past, it is part of this process to try and make it one that's very clear to everyone exactly what can and will be happening in order to address this issue, and that it really puts into play and the strong policy issue from the state legislature that we want this resolutions of these concerns to be handled at the local level and not imposed by the state of Minnesota, in which is certainly the inference that people would take if we tell them, well, MPCA can go ahead and identify these third parties, but we're not going to authorize it. I think that's really not where we want to go. We want to have some good quality policy that the legislature is involved in. Madam Chair, I'd like Mr. Raddatz to also speak directly to this amendment.
It's Mr. Raddatz?
Raddatz.
Raddatz. Okay, welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris Raddatz, Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau. I served on the G16, and some of the first meetings we went to, from agriculture's perspective, third-party TMDLs were a big issue for us. And I really hope you leave the language in the bill, and I'll let you know why. You know, you've heard from the people that are going to be doing the TMDLs. We're the folks that they're going to be done to, kind of. You know, we're going to be asked to do some things to comply with TMDLs, clean up water quality, and that's great, and we'll be happy to do that. Our concern was that TMDLs are developed with a process that PCA uses so that no matter who does it, be it Farm Bureau, the Soybean Growers, the Sierra Club, there is a clear science-based process that everybody has to follow. And I would draw your attention to page 2, line 29, subdivision 9 under the definitions. Third-party TMDL means a TMDL that is developed in whole or in part by a qualified public or private entity. We can discuss that, but I think here's the critical language. The pollution control agents, they must be developed consistent with the goals, policies, and priorities in this legislation. And as you mentioned, Representative, page 10 is referenced. You've referenced page 10. And I think that's why it's important that we keep this language in, because if we take it out, then we're silent on the issue. By keeping the language in, we're saying that third-party TMDLs have to be developed consistent with this legislation, and that's what we want. We want a stakeholder-driven process, a science-based process. So I'd encourage you to keep the language in so that from the agriculture perspective, we know that if a third-party TMDL is going to be done, it's going to be following the legislation that would be passed here. So, again, I'd encourage you to keep the language in.
Next up is Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Osmond. I think that the key issue here is role and responsibility and accountability, and I think that the one thing that I hear consistently from the environmentalists in my district is they want us to have if we're going to invest this much, it may bear one chance to really do a really great job on the issues that we're trying to address, is that we make sure that we have consistency across the state and that we don't have one area of the state that's sort of pollution light, one that's pollution low, one that's fast to clean up, and one that's going to drag their feet till eternity. They want to see a unified, coherent program that we can explain to them. I suspect there are one, but at the same time, I respect and think we ought to use local knowledge and expertise. But I know that, I suspect that that varies around the state. I've been an election judge in my area. People are irritated that they have to vote for these offices that I suspect in other parts of the city people or the state people really take seriously. But they say, what in the world is a Soil and Water Conservation Board? What does a watershed district have to do with me? They're not known. They're not trusted. They're not accountable. Any one group could take them over with any minor amount of organizing. And so I think we have to respect the diversity of the state. I look at it as the NRP program in Minneapolis, which 81 neighborhoods have done, most of whom have done a really wonderful, admirable, incredible job. Some of whom have faltered because they haven't had the kind of volunteer leadership that we had hoped for. I will support this amendment because I think there needs to be that kind of state consistency and credibility, but I think we need to follow it up then by a much stronger process in the bill that says in doing this, that stakeholder involvement is a partnership between the PCA and the scientists that it hires and that local community, and that it's not one or the other. It's a tremendous partnership. Quite honestly, yesterday when Ray Bowen said that he thought his groups don't want to have the PCA telling them what to do and that they thought there should be a lot more flexibility, raised questions with me about whether or not this would become a political process rather than a science-based process. We might save something if the state was doing all the contracts with these. There's only so many scientific contractors available to this region. If the state was doing master contracts with the same expectations, the same accountability, the same sort of format for the reports, those local watershed districts could more easily spend their time bringing their local expertise to the table rather than doing a bidding process, trying to figure out which of all these contractors is going to do the best job in their area. And so I really do think that this is just step one. Step two has to be making sure that those local people are there at the table, that they feel as much ownership in this process as anybody, but that there's consistency throughout the state with a lot of use of that local knowledge and expertise.
Okay, I know we have a couple of people that want to testify. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself. Yeah.
My name is Chris Sigford. I'm Water Quality Director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Thank you for the opportunity. I also was a member of the G16, and I have been involved in the development of basically all the TMDL, the big TMDLs that have been done in the state. And I would say, I would echo what Chris Raddatz said, that, you know, this is a big topic of discussion for the G16, and I was one that was initially fairly uncomfortable with the whole concept of pushing the development of TMDLs and the money down to the local level. And I sort of became a believer as it went along, partly in response to participating in the development of a third-party led TMDL. There were three third parties involved in the development of a TMDL for fecal coliform on a straight river in southeastern Minnesota. That was the Cannon River Watershed Partnership, Steele County, and my group, Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. One of the big lessons that I learned in participating in that effort was that there's a tremendous amount of knowledge at the local level. And they know what's going on the land. They know we had the county feedlot officer in there who knew about land application practices and what kind of agriculture there was in the it was largely a county watershed contiguous with Steele County. And there's a lot of knowledge that you leverage from going to the local level. And I think in addition, it's tremendously more cost effective, not only in terms of, we've already heard testimony about like doing monitoring and stuff like that, but I mean the three third parties that were involved in the development of that TMDL, I would say put in tens of thousands of dollars each in time and resources to development of that, that the state didn't have to pay a dime for, the feds didn't have to pay a dime for. So I think that you'd be really making our dollars not go very as far if you eliminate third-party TMDL development. And I think that the trust that's built in the development of these at the local level is tremendous. You get a lot of buy-in, and people understand what's going on in their area. They understand what the problems are, and they have a big say in how they want to solve it. They say, you know, we don't want to point the finger just at one source and go after them. We want to balance this out as best we can for our local folks. So I would urge you not to adopt this amendment to eliminate third-party TMDL. Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, we have a couple other members. We have somebody else in the audience. I think we have like 8 other amendments. Let's keep moving here. Representative Liebling, I believe, is next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm listening to this whole conversation with great interest, and I don't really have I'm not really committed to either side of this just yet, but I want to raise maybe a possible idea to see if this would maybe make this section a little bit more palatable to some of the members that are concerned about how this might play out. I mean, there's been this discussion about who's qualified. And I'm also concerned about that because it isn't really spelled out. I'd kind of like to know if there are already some things in place that sort of spell that out a little more clearly. I'm also kind of concerned about, you know, what the process is for the Pollution Control Agency to enter into these agreements and how transparent that process might be. So, you know, what about putting in some language that puts that when the Pollution Control Agency wants to enter one of these agreements, that there's some opportunity for the public to know that ahead of time, so that there could be some kind of I know I don't want to add more layers to this whole thing, because I know it has a lot of layers as it is, but, you know, maybe people would feel more comfortable if there would be an opportunity to weigh in before those agreements are made, so that we could. And I think that there's another benefit to doing something like that also, and that is that if there's buy-in, the more people that are buying in to having somebody do this, the better it might work. So, you know, I don't have any particular language, but I just want to kind of throw that out and see if other people think that might be something that would be helpful to resolve this.
Representative Osmond.
Madam Chair, based upon that, and how sometimes minds start coming together with similar conclusions, I have an amendment I would like to pass out that maybe the proposer of the current amendment would withdraw and consider this amendment. What this will do is on page 7, line 22, where we are talking about the third-party TMDL development, that after the period on line 22, we would insert, before entering into an agreement with an entity to develop a third-party TMDL, the Pollution Control Agency must make reasonable efforts to notify cities, counties, townships, soil and water conservation districts, and the watershed districts in the area that would be affected by the TMDL. And then on page 7, line 31, after the period, insert, before submitting a third-party TMDL to the Environmental Protection Agency, the Pollution Control Agency must comply with notice and procedure requirements of Subdivision 3. Approval of a third-party TMDL by the PCA is subject to the judicial review and contested case procedures in the same manner as approval for any other TMDL by the Pollution Control Agency. And so what it would do is to try and tighten up the third-party involvement in a TMDL by making sure that everyone is fully notified and that the MPCA is accountable for that activity.
Representative Osmond, we still have Representative Posh's amendment here, the 0127. I'll defer to him. I think you're asking him to temporarily withdraw it, and then I would be willing to move the 821 amendment, but the floor belongs to Representative Posh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Osmond. I believe this amendment before us is pretty much what we discussed yesterday, an amendment that was passed that I believe Representative Severson addressed with contested case and time and notices for publication and for including all interested parties. Those things should be done already, and I believe they are included in the bill, so I don't think that it really addresses the concerns that I have. I don't want to belabor the point a whole lot more. I think I've made some of the points with my concerns. The one thing I would just like to point out is I don't think the question was answered in which, in an example in the city of St. Joseph, we had a development going right by a river that's going to double the size of the city, impacted very much by our water quality standards, and if there's an impaired waterway. Have invested a substantial amount of money in the development, planning, and engineering of that. Now, if there needs to be a TMDL defense to that, I believe that nothing precludes a developer or a special interest like that in forming an organization. And that's why I'm here. And I'm not going to belabor the point a whole lot more. And at this time, I'd also like to request a roll call vote on this.
Madam Chair.
Representative Osmond.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the asking for a roll call. I think that the representative just asked for a roll call, I think, from her Senator. And I think that that's appropriate. We've had testimony from the business community. We've had testimony from the agricultural community. We've had testimony from the environmentalists. We've had testimony from the G16, which has been working on this issue for 2 years. As you know, this is a cooperative effort that's building out of a house of cards, and when we have legislators that didn't want to come in and take out a significant component, I think that they do need to be on record as to who they are. Because this is really, I tried to put out there what I believe answers the questions that have been raised as an alternative amendment. And I would really appreciate if you'd vote no on the 0127 amendment. And then, Madam Chair, I would encourage that the committee consider the A21 amendment and to clean up the language and provide some with a little better comfort zone than others.
Okay, I still have two members that have questions. Let's see if we can move through this quickly to the 0127 amendment. Representative Demmer is next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I've been listening, I'd like to try to boil this down for my simple mind. Representative Osmond, the way I see this is if we keep the language as the bill is currently, the MPCA would be allowed to go out, visit with local entities, and ask them to come up with some sort of a plan to meet the goal that they have, and then these entities would bring back that goal or that plan, and MPCA could look at it, decide if it's right or not, if it fits all the broad parameters, and decide to go ahead or not. If we do accept this amendment and take out the third party, my understanding is that the MPCA would then be able to take input from the people that are locally affected, but that they would have to actually write the thing and put it all together and then hope to hit the mark and what the people told them. Am I characterizing that pretty fair?
Representative Osmond.
Let's say Lisa Thorvig answer exactly that process, but I believe that it will and work in that situation as you described it. I do believe that they have used an inclusive process or attempted to use it in the past. What we're trying to do here is establish that inclusive process as state policy so that we have confidence that regardless of what administrations may do in the future, that this inclusive policy will be retained, because this is a process that's going to go on for many, many years.
Assistant Commissioner Thorvig.
Madam Chair and Representative, currently there is nothing that prohibits the MPCA from using third parties, either to lead a TMDL or to participate in a TMDL. We thought it made sense to put in the state's policy framework some parameters around third-party TMDLs and how we use third parties. So removing this from the bill will not change PCA's practice. It would have to actually be a prohibition for us to use third parties to change our practice. Right now, we use the state contracting practice. People who are on M contracts, we can enter contracts with. If we go into joint powers agreements, we have to meet the state's sole source procurement process. We have to follow Minnesota statute 16C.02 subdivision 10A, which talks about organizational conflicts of interest with entities that don't have the capabilities that we need. So we will pursue third-party TMDLs because we will not be able to have the resources to address all the TMDLs that are out there. So if the legislature doesn't want us to do third-party TMDLs, there needs to be a complete prohibition.
what that will do then is slow down the cleanup of our waters, make economic development slow down, and it will become much more costly for the state to implement the Clean Water Act provisions.
Follow-up, Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think that means that they're more involved if we accept the third party, that those are more involved in putting this together, and I like that idea, and I'm going to vote against this amendment.
Representative Osmond.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to point out again, this legislation is here to try and empower the people at the local level. That really does mean that third parties need to be involved in order to have that participation in state policy. And others would not want to empower and have it as state policy that we'd be empowering people at the grassroots level is a mystery to me.
Next up on the list, Representative Sheldon Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, just comment on the amendment. I do think it makes common sense to have local professionals be reviewing these matters, so I'll be opposing this amendment based on that.
Representative Loeffler.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members, I think this area is a little confusing for those of us who aren't on the Environment Committee, and I think the way the bill is drafted, TMDL is defined as a total maximum daily load, which to me is a scientific measure of what a waterway can handle. And so to me, when you talk about developing a TMDL, you're talking about, you know, how you do the testing to establish a scientific measure. That, to me, should be uniform across the state. I've gotten a note from one of the interested parties that says that's addressed by the feds, but there's really no wiggle room on the science, that what we're really debating here is not the definition of impairment. It's the discussion of how do we go forward into the future in implementing solutions. And I think that's, if that is indeed the case, where it's a little different issue, but I think using a scientific measure as the name for a process of a planning process, I think, is part of the confusion here, because we really, and maybe we need to rename that in the bill, because I'm reacting to the term as it's defined in the bill, which is this is a scientific measure of what a waterway can handle. And it appears that our discussion is all over the waterfront about, you know, defining cause, implementation, oversight, and I think that needs to be clarified for us.
Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate you bringing that point up, because impairment is the scientific methodology of discovering the pollutant that's in the water body that needs to be addressed. The TMDL, or total maximum daily load, is the plan of deciding as to where is that pollutant coming from in a wide variety of areas and how it can be addressed. That needs to be changed from with regard to the watershed. The watershed's location in the state of Minnesota makes the conditions very different, the use of that watershed. For example, forested areas are very different than agricultural areas and so forth. So the mechanisms to try and deal with the different pollutants need to be have the flexibility. That's what the TMDL process provides. That's when the commissioner was asking for flexibility to be able to deal with these things. That's what they're really encouraging, is that this is not one size fits all. This means we actually identify the pollutants in one specific methodology, impairments. That's agreed upon. That will all be done by the same level of science throughout the state. But as far as how to deal with those pollutants, will change watershed by watershed. That's the flexibility that's in the third-party TMDL provisions. That's why that's such a critical provision to keep in the bill for local involvement.
Quick follow-up, Representative Loeffler.
Follow-up. I believe, Representative Osmond, that is how it has been discussed of late in this committee, but if you look at the definition section on the bill on page 2, lines 34 going on, the definition of a TMDL is a scientific calculation. It does not address any of the things that you have just expanded it to. I think we maybe need a new term that's a TMDL plan, a TMDL report, which is much more expansive. This actually just describes how you do, as a scientific consultant, that one calculation.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, that's consistent with my explanation in that you want to have the resolutions to the problems also decided with utilizing good science, deciding where the problem's coming from and how to best reduce that pollution. We want to be able to use good science in that process also. So it's not just science with regard to identifying the problem. We also want to have quality science utilized in trying to resolve that problem. That's why it's mentioned in both locations, but it's for two separate types of scientific purpose.
Okay, roll call being requested on the amendment 127. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Tingelstad?
No.
Representative Severson?
No.
Representative Beard?
Absent.
Representative Seibert?
No.
Representative Demmer?
No.
Representative Dempsey?
No.
Representative Hoppe? Absent. Representative Hoche?
Yes.
Representative Ruth Johnson? Absent. Representative Sheldon Johnson?
No.
Representative Kahn?
Yes.
Representative Liebling?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Loeffler?
No.
Representative Mahoney?
Yes.
Representative McNamara?
No.
Representative Olson?
No.
Representative Aaron Peterson? Absent. Representative Neil Peterson?
No.
Representative Seifert?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
Representative Welty?
No.
Okay. There being three yes and 15 no, the motion does not prevail and the amendment is not adopted. Members, we still have several amendments. I'd like to bring up Representative Seifert's revised amendment, which is noted as 0125. I think it was distributed about 10 or 15 minutes ago, and I know that he has some handwritten notes here. So we're going to call this the revised 125 amendment with oral amendments. Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We worked this out with some of the parties. Representative Osmond was kind enough to try to pay attention to his bill and listen to this at the same time, but this is the compromise. The only changes, there's a grammatical change where on the handwritten part where it says including, that change that word to and.
Representative Seifert, could you just read it as the amendment should read so we're all clear on this thing?
Okay, and the other change was, what is this word, Phyllis? Regarding? Regulated changes to address. So I'll try to read this.
Okay.
Members, you can see the crossed out language. So the new part would say a list of potential implementation options, including a range of estimates of the cost of implementation and individual waste load data for any point sources addressed by the TMDL. New sentence. The implementation information does not need to be sent to the EPA for review and approval. We talked with Ms. Thorvig, the coalition, Representative Osmond, Representative Kahn, anyone else who had a dog in the pony show, and everybody's that agreed to this as a compromise. So I'd offer this amendment, and hopefully it's something. We'll get one amendment done today at least.
Representative Osmond to the revised 0125 amendment.
It will be fine.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Osmond, I want to go back to what Representative Loeffler was talking about before, about the confusion just in the terms here, because I think that's a real issue, and it's been confusing me throughout the 2 days of testimony, okay, coming in as somebody who doesn't have a lot of expertise in this area, but this amendment brings that right to the fore, because here you have a TMDL must include, but when you go back to the bill on page 2, subdivision 10, a TMDL means a calculation. So I would just like us to clarify, we're not talking, this amendment doesn't talk about what a calculation must include, we're talking about a plan must include. So I wonder if we could get that straightened out now before we go any further with this.
Assistant Commissioner Thorvig.
Madam Chair and Representative, you're having a debate on what we should call this, just like we did in the G16. We actually, in this bill, once also defined the term a TMDL report. Because that was more of the body of all the information that we were submitting to the EPA, which included the calculation. So when we talk about TMDL, it's both a calculation and a report. And so we certainly could bring back a definition of a TMDL report that kind of embodies all these things in addition to the calculation. I mean, the G6 team went back and forth on that and decided not to include it, but...
Follow-up from Assembly,
Madam Chair, I think we must include it. I mean, we're writing a statute here where we set out a definition of a term. And when you set out a definition, you can't then go using that term to mean something entirely different. So, you know, maybe Mr. Shepherd could weigh in on that, but I just think we're getting into a lot of trouble here if we don't include something like the term report so that we make it clear what we mean.
Mr. Shepherd.
Madam Chair and members, just see what Representative Osment and Liebling and Commissioner Thorvig think of this, but on page 2, line 35, after the words calculation of, would it be helpful to add and a report on, so that it would bring both concepts in? Then the TMDL would mean a calculation of and a report on, and it would take in that both concepts.
Is somebody making that as a motion here? Representative Mahoney and makes that oral. Let's see, where are we at on this?
I mean, we're really technically in
my area. Right. Yeah, that's not actually part of what the amendment that's up right now.
Yeah.
So.
Good point. Madam Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Yeah, Madam Chair, for me that doesn't clear up the problem. I think we need to, instead of having one word mean both things, I think where we need a report, we should be saying a report. Or maybe we should have maybe we need a separate definition of a TMDL report. But I don't think that I just think it creates problems when you, you know, presumably you're going to have people reading this bill or this statute someday who are not going to know what we talked about today, and we need to just make it clear what we're referring to.
Madam Chair.
Representative Osment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there are wonderful comments, and we'll certainly be working on trying to get some clarification to that confusion.
Representative Kahn.
Well, when I read the definition of TMDL starting on page 2 and going on to page 3, it's not just one number. It's a very complicated number and the things that go into getting that number and that kind of thing. And I don't think it's confusing to add this language at this time. I don't think it's two things. I think it's one thing, and you just have to understand that some numbers are absolute numbers, and some numbers have a cloud of mush around them, and this is trying to tighten down that cloud of mush about what is supposed to go into the calculation. So I think it's okay, and if someone later... I don't think we need separate words at this time, because when you read this whole definition... There's enough stuff in that, how that definition comes out, so you can add this without making it any worse.
Okay, let's get back to this amendment here, the revised 0125 amendment. Okay, that's Representative Seifert's amendment, revised 0125.
Madam Chair.
Representative McMurr.
Thank you. Just a real question for Representative Seifert. Representative Dempsey and I were discussing on line 6. The fourth word, the word all. Just wondering if either you or maybe Mr. Shepherd, do we see any problems with using the word all in there?
Representative Seifert.
Representative McNamara, I don't see it as a problem. You're saying maybe someone could come back later and say, hey, you missed something here, and then muck up the process.
Mr. Shepherd, is that possible, or...
I'm fine changing it otherwise.
Well, the only thing would be is I just thought if we... Thank you, Madam Chair, excuse me. Change the word all to the word the. I mean, I don't know. And I guess I would defer to,
sure,
to Representative Osment.
Seifert's amendment, and he said yes.
I would be happy that in the sense of trying to get the bill done before March is over, I would be happy to take that.
You just want to get one amendment passed. That's all you're doing.
Representative Seifert, could you repeat what you're incorporating?
Madam Chair, line 6, a statement of, and then delete all and insert the. And I'll incorporate that.
Thank you. And I think we're ready to...
I'll renew my motion.
Vote on the... on the revised 0125 with the oral amendment as noted. All in favor of that amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and amendment is adopted, and we've gotten one through today. Members, I don't know which members belong to the amendments we have up here. If somebody has some pressing ones you want to get in the next 20 minutes here, and we will go to 12:15, please let us know right now. Boy, I was really hoping that we would get through this bill today. We'd like to take up the one that was handed out a few minutes ago, the A21 amendment. Representative Osment, that you had talked about it. I'd be happy to move the A21 amendment. Representative Osment.
I believe it helps provide a little more clarification and give people some comfort that this will be an inclusive process.
Any questions on the A21 amendment? Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair, I have an amendment, A20, which same page, same line. I'd like to just add to the Osment amendment.
Can we get it distributed? Do we have it here? Or?
I'm sure you have it there.
Okay, we'll get that distributed, and it would be what, an amendment to the amendment?
Yes, just an amendment to the amendment, ma'am.
A20, sure. It's called? Okay. All right, we're getting that distributed. Any other questions to the A21 amendment? Okay.
How about if I explain my amendment?
Yes, and how we're doing that is Representative Mahoney moves an amendment to the amendment, so noted as A20. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is, I have a small verbal amendment to it, and I will add that when it's passed out. But my amendment, for all intents and purposes, says that when we're going to do a pollution control and they're going to develop a third-party TMDL, they promise to pay prevailing wage rate established under Section 177.42 to employees working on the development of the TMDL. And I have an oral amendment to that which says when volunteers are not used. So,
Representative Mahoney, can you repeat the oral amendment? What's the line number?
Certainly. On line 7, after the quotation marks, or included in the quotation marks, I'm not sure how that needs to be done, when volunteers are not used.
Representative Mahoney incorporates the oral amendment to the A20 amendment to the amendment. Any questions on Representative Mahoney's? Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, as members probably know, I am not a fan of prevailing wage rates, and I think it drives up the cost of doing business, particularly in rural Minnesota, in my particular part of the state. I'm wondering if there's any estimate of what this will cost the people doing this on the local level. They already subjected to this in many other places. And will this drive up the cost of being able to do these?
Representative Mahoney.
I don't know why you would think it might drive up the cost of them, or if they're going to be a paid employee, whether it's of the MPCA or any other particular organization, they're just going to pay what's the prevailing rate of those of that same employee in that particular county or jurisdiction. If your members, if the people of your county have done their work and put their filed their paperwork with, I think it's the Department of Labor and Industry, that should just be what you would normally pay. All we're trying to do is protect the idea of not having somebody come in from India or China and do all these for $1 a day. Just making sure that people get a decent wage for their work. I'd like to know how the author of the bill feels about putting this particular amendment to the amendment on his amendment.
Representative Osment.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Mahoney. It's really more important to me to know what the G16 thinks about this. I would suspect that this is something we can work with along the line. I don't get anybody jumping up and down as I'm looking around. So.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to follow Representative Mahoney. We're going to involve a number of organizations here that historically have had nothing to do ever with prevailing wage. And the requirements now for them to come involved in this process
and determining which wage classification they're going to follow under prevailing wage of, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if they've ever extended into this arena. We're talking about public works projects and such where we normally would involve trades that are used to being involved in this process and can understand. Do we have history for where we would be involving in these kind of, some of these are professional trades that may not be paid by the hour, determining now that they're going to be subjected under prevailing wage, who's going to determine what classification they're in and whether they really should be under this and how it's going to be determined. And I don't know if watershed, I guess I would want to know as Representative Osman, the watershed districts and the watershed organizations, have they ever dealt with these issues, and do their people, where would they classify them, and how would you deal with the fact that many of these people are paid currently by the week and not by the hour where normally our prevailing wage workers are in?
Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative McNamara. That's why I put in where volunteers are not used, to make sure that many of these organizations have been, and has been spoken around this table, that most of the work that will be done in the water and taking all these tests and stuff will be done by volunteers. You then get into the labs, whether it's the public Department of Health or it is any other particular labs doing some of the testing. These are not small companies. These are not isolated companies. There, the prevailing wage booklet down at the agencies are huge and have a full list, and I'm sure all these people will be able to be found underneath the their listings there. And if you've got a concern out in the county of Dakota or out in the county of Candy, Ohio, I'm sure that they've done their paperwork and have filed these things, so it should be on the record and you shouldn't have any major problems with this.
Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, as Representative Mahoney probably knows, I've worked very much under prevailing wage and have been supportive of many of the parts of that. I just see this, Representative Osmond and then other members of the G16, these are a number of firms that have never worked in this arena before. And I don't know how a soil water conservation district, I don't know if they pay their people by the hour. How are they going to administer this program? And I'm trying to picture somebody wading out in the Vermilion Creek, and what classification are they going to fall under, Representative Mahoney? I mean, I just am real concerned. I don't know where we're going with this.
Mm-hmm. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The last person I know that waded out into Vermilion and did some testing, and I don't know whether it was for a TMDL or Water Clarity or whatever, was a state employee, and they had a full record of what he was paid on an hourly or weekly basis or whatever, and that's all this is saying, is that you've got a record, use the record, and if there's the odd case where there is no record, I'm sure it's not that much of a hurdle to get over trying to figure out someone who's taking water samples, whether it's in LaClaire County or Cook County or Ramsey County, and just filing the paperwork on it. All we're trying to do is make sure that people, that we don't all of a sudden start rushing to the bottom and how we're going to pay these people if they're not volunteers.
Madam Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Just to clarify, Representative Mahoney, none of those people would be subjected to prevailing wage. State employees are not subjected to the prevailing wage inclusion. Those people many times are paid by the week, so your analogy of that working is not a good comparison at all. They don't have anything to do with prevailing wage. They're not applied to it. Many of those people are paid by the week. In this application we're talking about here, I don't see people that are landscape contractors or pipe fitters or 49ers doing this work of where the intent of prevailing wage is coming from. I just don't know. This is a can of worms. I really would like to know what the G16 feelings are on this, because I see these organizations that have never worked within this, and I don't even know how it would apply, because most of them, I think, are going to be working by the week. And where would the classifications come from? Under what jurisdiction? And then would MPCA be requiring the soil water conservation districts to move those forms through that organization then?
Let's get Representative Osmond on here. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've had a bit of a chance to try and talk briefly with several of the potential affected parties, especially those who would be involved in third-party TMDL activities themselves. And they say that their levels of government, they're already, they are the prevailing wage out there. That really doesn't impact on them, whether it's soil and water conservation districts or the watershed districts and counties and so forth. So it doesn't seem like that's a conflict there. I'm not quite sure what other implications it may have, but we'll continue to monitor this and see what get some more information as it goes forward. But I don't think it's it presents a problem to us right now, as no one said that anyway from the G16 that's talked to me so far, and they have not indicated any difficulty with it.
Representative McNamara.
Okay, so I understand Representative Osmond and Representative Mahoney. If something comes up from these organizations that they see a logistic problem, as you move forward through the process of the other committees, it'll be potentially looked at. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, absolutely.
I think we're ready to vote. Okay, we're going to vote on the A20 Mahoney amendment to the amendment, which included oral changes that were incorporated. All in favor of the A20 amendment to the amendment, signify by saying yes.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Okay, we're on the A21 amendment that the chair moved for Representative Osmond, and that has been amended now with the A20 Mahoney amendment. Representative Osmond, to the A21.
I've explained, Madam Chair, that I believe this will be a good addition to the bill.
Questions, Representative Leland?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Osmond, this does address a lot of what I was suggesting before, except that there's no provision for any kind of time period or, you know, it just says that the PCA has to notify people, but, you know, that may not be much comfort, you know, if they notify you that day, the same day they then, you know, go ahead and sign the agreement. And so, as I said before, I don't really want to add layer to layer to this, but, you know, what about, would you be amenable to adding something that would, you know, allow just some kind of a comment period? I don't even know if I want to say that these groups should be able to stop the process, but just to have an opportunity to, for a reasonable opportunity to have real input.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative, the intent here is to try and establish in clear language what will already occur. And we're trying to get this bill to show that it's clearly state policy that we want to have these organizations working together and cooperatively. We're not trying to put into place a bunch of stumbling blocks so that they can be utilized for court challenges long term. As soon as we start getting into the specifics like we're discussing, if somebody misses a court date automatically now, or misses a specific date automatically, then they could be subject to a court hearing or a lawsuit. And we want to try to avoid those types of things in this language. And so we know that the process can continue without this bill, but I believe it would be better if the legislature has put into a process that we've all agreed to, so that then when we go to our colleagues and ask them for adequate funding to really deal with this impairment, water impairment issue across the state of Minnesota, we'll get the cooperation we need in supporting new revenues into this activity. So just the activity that's already authorized is what we're just trying to carry forward, but get it established in state policy so that we can get confidence by others to go ahead and let's adequately fund this effort too. And so I really encourage you not to clutter up the specifics that could be used to the detriment of the overall goal that we're trying to achieve.
Any further questions on the A21 amendment? Chair renews the A21 amendment. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails and amendment is adopted. Members, we're running out of time. We're going to continue this bill to tomorrow. We do have the Representative Zeller's bill, which is the Sex Offenders Governor's Initiative. I do want to take up the Zeller's bill first tomorrow, and then I guess we'll do the remainder of the meeting with Representative Osmond's bill. We still do have several amendments, and I'd appreciate if anybody wants to claim those. I don't know if we have two or five left to go through. I would like to get through those tomorrow, though, because this bill needs to go to several committees. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It would be very helpful if the people that have amendments, if they would talk to me a little bit. Maybe we can resolve some of these things rather than have to debate it out, you know, around the committee table. So we're very willing to try and massage people into a comfort zone. This is really trying to carry forward current practice into quality policy.
Thank you. And with that, members, meeting adjourned.